Christmas is nearly here again. It's a time filled with many emotions, and this year it's likely to be even more so. Many of us are separated physically from family members and loved ones we haven't seen for a long time, and that truly is painful. For others, however, the pain has a different cause. They're in lockdown with people who are making their lives difficult and unhappy. In the fourth of our series with Citizens Advice Cranley, I'm speaking this morning to Jo from Waverley Domestic Abuse Outreach Team, which works alongside Citizens Advice and under their umbrella. Good morning, Jo.
Morning, Linda.
So, Jo, hello. It's nice to speak to you. Not such a nice topic, but it's one that's around and here with us. So, we, you know, in Cranley Community Radio, we take on all aspects of life. Can you tell us, please, what is domestic abuse?
Well, domestic abuse takes on many forms, some of which we'll talk about later. But generally, within all forms of domestic abuse, it's about the control of one individual over the other. So limiting an individual's capacity to breathe and have their own...
the individual, yeah. So in Waverley, how many cases do you have normally each year?
We have ongoing clients, but we take on around about 300 new clients a year, and continue to support them for however long they need our support. But obviously, when we're talking about clients, we're also including the families. So it's usually not just one victim, but maybe children in that family or parents in the family. Mm-hmm. So we try to treat all the victims within that family together.
Yeah, I suppose you have to. So you've described briefly what domestic abuse is. So what sort of characteristics might be there for an unhealthy relationship that would lead to abuse?
Well, as we said earlier, there's many different sorts, and we use the word abuse rather than violence in Surrey to reflect that. Mm-hmm. Financial abuse, physical abuse, emotional abuse, sometimes a mixture of all of these things. We have all sorts of different problems that come to us, but say generally it's about the control of one individual over the other.
Yeah, so the sort of thing like not giving someone enough money or making them very accountable for every penny, that sort of thing.
That's right. And that's often how it shows up, or how it reflects in society. You know, it might be that the lady at work that isn't able to contribute to a whip round, maybe if someone's leaving, and possibly because every penny of her money is controlled. You know, that's how it can sort of show.
Yeah, and I think I've seen in a film or something somewhere where somebody was saying what kind of clothes to wear and so on.
Absolutely, and rules generally, you know, rules within the household around eating, or like you say, what spaces they're allowed to use in the house. We have victims who are only allowed to use certain rooms, or, you know, all sorts of things. Basically, as they control of environment as well as finances.
Gosh. Would you say COVID has made things worse?
Definitely. We've seen an increase in the referrals that are coming through. That's over a 25% increase, and you probably heard about that in the sort of national press. Mm-hmm. But also just the sheer event of a lockdown is really a perpetrator's sort of idea of heaven, you know, that gave them the complete control over the whole family. Everyone was in under one roof together, not allowed to go out. You know, absolutely every minute of the day could be monitored and sort of accounted for by the perpetrator. So we had many victims who were completely trapped during that time.
Oh, wow.
And COVID, you know, really kind of played into the hands of the perpetrators. So we did find that things were getting more and more high risk, you know, it was difficult to get hold of people as well, obviously, to try and ring people when the perpetrator maybe sat next to them on the sofa is a difficult thing as well. So it's been tricky all round.
Absolutely. It sounds like living in an absolute nightmare. I mean, if people do manage to contact you somehow, and we'll put the phone numbers on the website as usual, do you always say to them that they must leave, or can you support people in other ways? Is it always that disastrous?
Well, we are, you know, we're client led, and of course, we're not, you know, not going to say you've got to leave now, obviously, unless it's a very high risk life or death sort of situation. And in fact, you know, we know that a managed exit is much safer than leaving in a hurry and a flurry. You know, we like to support our clients to get them in the right place, get all the ducks lined up, so to speak, and help them to do a safe managed move if that's what they want to do. Equally, we can help with orders to perhaps keep the perpetrator away from the home, or get legal advice. So, you know, it depends on what's going on in the home and also what the client wants. You know, sometimes there are other reasons that they may want to stay in the family home. So we have to work around trying to make sure that the perpetrator is not able to continue staying there.
Yeah, so it's yes, I can imagine that each case is really difficult and different.
Yeah, I mean, they are, say every case is different, but equally the perpetrator's tactics are all very much the same. As I say, it always comes back to the control, that element of control. Often there's chipping away at the victim's self-esteem. So often they'll be told, you know, they're useless, they're a rubbish mum, they're got mental health problems, et cetera, et cetera. So that they're beaten right down to a state where they haven't got a lot of self-confidence, that they believe that, you know, no one will believe them. And that's something that we often hear from our clients. You know, the first, often when they ring in to us and start talking to us, and it's like, you actually believe me, you believe what I'm saying. And of course we do. And that sometimes is the first time someone has actually believed what's going on, because of course we're all very good at playing happy families and covering up what goes on in our household, you know, particularly ladies.
I was going to ask you, so people tend not to tell their neighbours then?
Well, sometimes it's a case that they can't, because they might be tracked or monitored or you know, not allowed to mix with the neighbours. And quite often we find that these ladies aren't allowed jobs, aren't allowed to join the PTA or the local Pilates class or whatever. You know, they're not encouraged to mix. Isolation is also a big part of it often. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes it's just not having the opportunity. And I do believe strongly, and I say, whoever I'm talking to about domestic abuse, it's not just something that happens in another road, in another street, to people we don't know. You know, absolutely guaranteed most of your listeners will know someone whose life has been touched by domestic abuse. And it is, you know, the lady at the post office, or the lady you see walking her dog every day, or the mum that's always, you know, scurrying off after the school run. It's people that we know and cross paths with every day. And if we just, you know, make the time to make that communication, ask people how they are, you know, and if you do suspect that something's going on, ask them, you know, do you feel safe at home? That's the question that we recommend. And that might just open up, you know, a line of communication. And that's invaluable. And I say, a lot of these clients say it's the thing of someone believing them, someone taking that first step to find out what's going on. And then, of course, there is our agency to sort of swoop in and help out them. But it's just that first disclosure that's the most important thing, really.
Yeah, of course. And then COVID again, even if they can get out, there are so few people about, and you know, people not speaking to each other, really.
We're all losing the art of communication at the moment, aren't we? We can't even tell if people are smiling at us or not behind the mask.
It's very hard. I've been trying to learn how to smile with my eyes. That sounds to me like quite a difficult conversation to have with someone. Do you feel safe at home? Do you think people would say straight off if they didn't?
Well, no, I think especially if we're talking neighbours or maybe someone you come across at school or in the workplace, obviously colleagues and things, I think it is more about getting that friendship, that communication going. And obviously there would be maybe alarm bells ringing, and just gently trying to, you know, ask the question. And if it's not suitable or not practical, you know, we have got obviously numbers that you're going to give out at the end, and just to maybe suggest to someone, or that, you know, even leave a little leaflet or a little scrap with our number on someone's desk or something, you know, just really to let people know there's support out there.
I'm going to come a bit later on to advice for now, but looking to the future, these situations really, they can't go on. We need to break the vicious circle. How are you teaching children about healthy relationships?
Well, as you say, obviously prevention is better than cure. And although a lot of our work is sort of mopping up the crises and helping people move on, we truly believe that, you know, that is one of the keys, teaching children about healthy relationships. Mm-hmm. And we do travel around a lot of the local secondary schools and do workshops with the children when they're aged about 12, 13, mm-hmm. All around healthy relationships. And it starts on kind of a friendship basis and sort of asking them questions about what's a healthy friendship, i.e., you know, you're allowed to have other friends, your friends should support you in what you do, they should be pleased for you if you've got other friends, you should be able to wear what you want and do what you want without being ridiculed, etc. Yeah. And those kind of rules apply into a boyfriend-girlfriend relationships, and that's the way we teach it. And it's very interesting how some of the young people, you know, perceive boyfriend-girlfriend relationships and what would be expected. So, you know, there's a lot of work to be done there. And all we can do is model good relationships and model self-confidence in everyone. And, you know, hopefully that will help. Yeah. But we do get disclosures every time we go into a school and start talking about these healthy relationships. There's, you know, invariably at least one child who'll come forward and they'll be realizing that what's happening at home in their own home isn't healthy, you know. So again, just showing how widespread it is, really. Many people are touched by it.
That's right. Well, I remember, you've just made me remember something that I was teaching in Northumberland 30 years ago, and I remember in my sixth form we were reading a book. And it came out in the French novel that the girls in the group did not know. They thought that violence to your wife was acceptable, that it wasn't illegal. They thought could do that, you know.
Yes, yeah. And in fact, I think it wasn't illegal to beat your wife until, you know, fairly recently in history. So,
they were amazed. So, yeah, so carry on with the good work. And let's hope that one day people won't feel threatened by each other and they'll be happy enough with each other to to be able to stand a bit of competition or whatever it is in a relationship that makes it work when put two people being individual, I suppose.
That's it, and you know, supporting each other and allowing each other freedom within the relationship to pursue your own goals and you know, obviously have financial freedom, etc. And it's very difficult. Once one thing starts being controlled, it kind of leads into other things in your general life. Yeah. And, you know, of course, these things happen gradually as well. You know, often you hear people say, oh, why don't you just leave him? Or why don't you do this and that? And it's not that easy. You know, when we meet people, we fall in love and we're pulled into a relationship. And invariably, the abuse doesn't start straight away. Mm. It builds up. It starts gently. There's that whole kind of knocking down of someone's self-esteem. Then maybe rules get put in place and the control escalates over a period of time. And that's known about domestic abuse. So, you know, by the point where it's got really bad and people are saying, well, why doesn't she just leave him? She's probably so tied in with all the stuff that he's been drip feeding her on a daily basis. It's a very tricky thing. And you know, we need to support a lot of things for that victim. We've got to support the self-confidence and the empowerment of knowing what her rights are. You know, often she's told you won't get the house, you won't get the children, etc., etc. So
I can imagine. I'm going to ask you something now. You've identified the victims as mainly being women, and I know often where people add that there are men who are in the similar position. Is that so, or is it? I mean,
yes, it is. And I should apologise to our male listeners, because you know, I'm very aware that I do say that, and to make the point that yes, there are male victims, and yes, we do help male victims as well. They can either come through our service, and we're happy to talk to them, or there is a specialist man who will you know, if they'd rather speak to a male, we can provide that as well. I would say it is a gendered crime, and it is a crime, remember, domestic abuse. But in general, it's about 7% of victims who are males. But actually, amongst those victims are males. Still often the perpetrators are male, so it could be a brother or a father.
Really?
Or a lover. And that's the thing about domestic abuse, it's someone that's in an intimate relationship with you, so either family or someone close to you. That's what makes it domestic abuse. So, you know, often still the perpetrator is male. I mean, there are perpetrators who are women, but it is quite a rare thing. So that's why I'm often referring to them. But we do understand that they cut through all society and lots of different people.
Or levels all peoples.
Absolutely.
Well, so for someone who at the moment is finding themselves in a difficult situation over Christmas, how will people in that situation survive if it's an ongoing situation and or if it's a new situation?
I think if it's ongoing, and again, talking to victims, often, you know, they've got their own coping mechanisms in place anyway, you know, that they've got ways of shutting off, shutting down, you know, that this is what's happening to them on a daily basis. It's not just happening at Christmas.
Yeah.
So in general, you know, they get to know the signs and signals that they will have tried to manage their own safety as best they can if there's no escaping the relationship. So, and hopefully, I would hope that, you know, the people in that situation are being sort of supported by us anyway, and, you know, maybe at least have some sort of plan for going forwards, or, you know, working on getting themselves sorted sort of legally or emotionally.
Yeah.
For people that it's new to, and I guess, again, it's that whole thing about escalation. It's not necessarily new, but they might just be coming to that revelation that actually this is an abusive relationship I'm in. You know, just coming to terms with it is a big step.
Yeah.
But then for them to know that the next step is, you know, there is support out there. Please call us, email us, or, you know, contact us, and we will do our best to contact you.
What if I was being watched over Christmas very carefully and I couldn't sort of phone you in the house anywhere for fear of being overheard?
Yeah, and that happens to a lot of our clients. Yeah. Not only are they listened to, some, you know, sometimes they go through their phones and they check their messages and they check their location, et cetera. There are a few things in place. The helpline number, which is available online, they do have a chat room, a website chat room, which those people could access via email if that was suitable. And the other thing that's been going on, and this has come out of COVID crisis, is that Boots the Chemist are offering safe spaces for women to go and make a phone call to a domestic abuse agency. So, you know, that's been invaluable to some, and obviously we all need things from the chemist, so it, you know, it can be quite a good excuse that just need to pop into the chemist. But if everyone out there is just aware that they are offering that service, that if you make yourself known to a member of staff and say you need to contact a domestic abuse agency, they will find you a room with a phone to safely make that call.
Well, it's good to know. It's sad to know that it's necessary, but it's good to know that it's there and that there is help. You, even though it's Christmas, you're not alone, and there's always going to be someone to speak to at least and get you through the next few days and then get a longer term solution in some way.
That's right. But obviously, I mean, if it is escalating, as things often do, sadly, at Christmas time, you know, still the message is, you know, if you're feeling fearful, if you're feeling unsafe, call 999. The police are on duty all over Christmas, and the police, Surrey Police, we work very closely with. They're, you know, they're hot on domestic abuse. They do understand. They understand the dynamics of it. They've done a lot of work over the last couple of years in sort of getting up to speed with it. And they have actually specialist domestic abuse cars that will go out to an incident if they think it is domestic abuse, trained officers. You know, they do get it. Don't be afraid of the police, I guess, is my message. And, you know, certainly don't think, oh, I've got to wait another few days to the new year to phone, you know, the agency. Please call the police. And we do have cover ourselves over Christmas anyway, so there will be someone at the end of our phone lines over Christmas.
There's always someone there.
Yeah.
Well, Joe, that's a bit of a downer, really, isn't it? It's not.
No, because actually, and funny enough, I said this to my team last night. We had a virtual Christmas do. that was an interesting thing. That's another thing because of COVID. But we were talking about it at the end, and I was saying to the ladies, you know, have a good rest over Christmas, because we know there'll be more clients coming through in the new year, more clients and more children that need our support. And I said, you know what, actually though, they're really lucky because they've got a really good team here ready to help them. And that's how I feel, and I think that's a positive spin on it. You know, anyone out there who's suffering, anyone out there who feels they don't know where to turn, or, you know, they just don't know how they're going to get out of this situation. There is really good support available from our service, and, you know, there's nothing that you can tell us that's going to shock us. We will help in any which way we can.
It's really wonderful to speak to you. You sound so confident and so experienced, and, you know, the team is there just waiting. So I hope that if anyone listening needs the message, they can take advantage of that. And we'll put the number and the helpline chat room address on the Destination Cranleigh website for everybody to read after the programme. So thank you so much, Jo. It's been a pleasure speaking to you, and I hope you have a good rest so you can carry on in the new year. And I hope that there's peace and joy throughout the land in Waverley. We're only in tier two. We've got nothing to be upset about. We should be looking forward, I hope. Thank you again.
Thank you, Linda.